Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you all for joining me. And I'm glad we are meeting this evening, especially with all that's happening in December with the Sunday evenings. So I thought we'd just take a moment and go inward. Just reconnect with this depth of silence that we are. And from this space, the space of silence, the space of silent reverence, I invite you all to gently open your hearts. Open them to God. Open them to grace, to that which is greater. And let us commune this evening in this space of receptivity, in this space of willingness to receive, to be open. And of course, to be fully receptive, it's often important that we first let go. Let go of anything that may be troubling you, anything which is heavy on your heart or heavy on your mind. So I invite you to take some deep, full breaths. Deep, full belly breaths. And exhale. There's a sense of letting go. On the inhale, there's this gentle sense of receiving. And so as we're joining together this evening, I invite us all to step into this childlike place. Place of innocence and receptivity. And to open to the direct experience. The direct experience of the silence of your mind. Direct experience of the love and aliveness of your heart. In your subtle, energetic body. Direct experience of your hara. Deep well of power. Which feels like a mountain within us. So we're connecting to our true nature. Our true nature being silent and spacious. Our true nature being radiant and luminous. And our true nature being deep, powerful, rooted, profound. And even indestructible. And so I invite you to join me in letting go. Letting go of the day, the week, the busyness of mind. Letting go of any old and heavy emotions. And simultaneously fall into that which is good, that which is true, that which is profound about our very nature. And so from this space of rediscovery, from this space of rediscovering what we are, I invite you to open your hearts fully. Imagine your heart just opening, being like a cup or like a flower tilted toward the sun. Just opening in a receptive way. I invite you to open the crown chakra. And again, imagining a cup or a bowl, or being like a flower or tree growing toward the sun, being receptive toward the light, receptive to the light. And if you're sensitive, you'll notice a very gentle stream of light pouring down from above. And God's grace is here this evening, blessing us all. We can inwardly smile in a humble way, say, what a gift it is. What a gift it is to be open, to be receptive. Be connected to God's grace. And so as we sit here, I invite you to allow your body to fully relax, to fully let go. To fully step into what you are. Who am I beyond the movement of mind? What is it that I am? It's beyond the movement of mind, beyond the movement of emotion. What is this that I am? And so we are exploring our nature, feeling the aliveness, the luminosity, the blissfulness of our own nature. We are waking up to the depth of our own presence. And from this space, we are gently opening our hearts to God, to grace. And letting go into experiencing fully the love of God right here now. Experiencing God's eternal love as it descends into us. And what a gift it is. How fortunate we are. To open in this way, to receive in this way. To be the very experience of love. God said we were made in her image and likeness. Her image and likeness. We can experience this directly right here, right now. Through opening our hearts. Through stepping out of our minds. And into our presence. And what a beautiful present you are. So in a funny way, as we sit here in this space of meditation, we begin to see the art of meditation is the art of contemplating and experiencing our own beauty, our own divinity. And as we wake up to this divinity, we see this divinity everywhere. We see there is no division between us and God, between us and each other, between us and life, between us and the sky. That there is this beauty which is everywhere. And it's such a gift to let go into. We are so fortunate that the Lord made us in her image and likeness. Where we have the possibility to open into everything. To be and experience the hugeness of life. The love life. The vastness of life. We have this wonderful opportunity. If we are willing to let go of the heaviness of thought, to let go of our past, to let go of our conditioning, to let go of that which has troubled us, that which we've argued with. We simply let go of these things and step into this instance which we are. Everything radically begins to change. So I invite you to continue to let go, to continue to experience life in this way, to continue to experience yourself in this way, to continue to deepen into the depth of your own nature. Depth of your nature. When you really feel into this, you begin to see that the depth of your nature is the depth of God's nature. Begin to notice worlds waking up in you. May begin to feel an unbounded spaciousness, vastness, incredible peace. Profound sense of love pouring into you and pouring out of you simultaneously. Like a spring which is overflowing. Overflowing with love. Overflowing with light. Overflowing with peace and abundant bliss. And so I encourage you to continue to sit in this way, to experience directly in this way. Meditation never has to end. But I'm going to shift gears and speak about something that has been on my radar. In one way or another, I've found myself a part of this group. It's a small group with a couple other non-dual teachers and people who've supported non-dual teachings, who support groups. And along with my friend Rick Archer from Buddha. And together we've been contemplating as a community, as peers, a set of ethical standards for teachers. Because within the community, within the spiritual world, and actually this is the world in general, there's many people who aren't following a wholesome set of ethics. And as a teacher myself and a counselor, I meet with a lot of individuals who had a teacher and who struggled greatly with their teacher. And the student walked away, you know, after having an experience. You know, an experience of gross misconduct. and from their teacher. The student was oftentimes very confused. They walked away from the spiritual path, or they walked away greatly wounded, and they didn't want to trust anymore. I always had this sense, you know, since I was a child. I used to go to the Catholic Church. I never paid too much attention to the priests and what they were doing. I simply would walk into church and open my heart to God. I like to have the direct experience of God. And any time I heard about a human making a great mistake, a huge ethical mistake, I just considered them a human. I never blamed God. It's unfortunate on the spiritual path that many students who, many individuals who experience, when that pain arises within a church, within a spiritual tradition, when the pain arises with a teacher, oftentimes they let go of God. And to me, that's a great mistake. That's a great misunderstanding. Now, God is perfect. It's us humans that live in an evolutionary world. And in an evolutionary world, you know, everyone has a growing edge. Everyone has a shadow. Now, some individuals have greater shadows than others. And when an individual wakes up, or when an individual is a teacher, or a mother, or a father, or a healer, or whatever it is, the ethics of enlightenment, they don't have to be just for enlightened people. It could be for anyone, anywhere we are on the path. Yeah, you know, the ethics are the same. Yeah, you know, Christianity, there was the difference in Buddhism. I believe it's called the five precepts. And so as I was speaking with my friend Rick and Jack and John and Kent, and we were contemplating these, well, what would be a good ethicals, some good ethical standards? And for me, it was quite simple, because when I trained to become a counselor, you know, my code of ethics is like 26 pages long. You have to practice therapy, so it's very full. And it's very clear what the rules are. But, you know, if you go to, massage therapy school, there's probably a code of ethics. You know, if you become a priest or a preacher or a pastor, a reverend, whatever it is, oftentimes there's a code of ethics, and ethics are wonderful as long as everyone knows them and them, abides by them. But what I found is that there's many teachers. I was even speaking with the wife of a very famous teacher here in the United States a little while ago. And she was speaking about how her husband was off having an affair. Lots of affairs, multiple affairs. And she was having to carry the secret so that the Sangha didn't have to hear about it. It was quite painful. And I hate to say that this is the only time I've heard this story, but I've heard this story many times. The wife or husband contacts me, or the teacher contacts me and lets me know they're deeply struggling with something. And so the first, all human, we all have our growing edge. We all have our shadows and shortcomings. But when we follow a code of ethics, we tend to get in less trouble. In the words of the Buddha, you know, Buddha put forth the Eightfold Path. And it was a path so that there would be less suffering, less karma created for oneself and for others. For oneself and for others. And so the first thing at the, you know, the top of my list and this code of ethics, and it's a work in progress, which I'm working on creating here. The first thing is to speak the truth. Can we commit ourselves to speaking the truth? Can we agree to that? Speaking the truth. What does it mean to speak the truth? It means we speak from our heart. Not our emotional heart. Because our emotional heart can be angry or sad or, you know, can be filled with rage or this or that. So this idea of speaking the truth, this act of speaking the truth, it's to be honest, but honest from the perspective of true nature. And true nature does not wish to harm. It speaks openly and honestly and sometimes firmly. But it doesn't attack, it doesn't lie, it doesn't steal, it doesn't cheat. So if all of us just committed to this, if we allowed our words to be filtered through the lens of the compassion and wisdom of our heart, our world would be radically different. So can we commit to speaking the truth? The second thing, and within this code of ethics, is can we act from the truth? It's funny, sometimes I'll meet someone and they'll know the truth. They'll know it in the depth of their being. They'll come to me and they'll say, well, I know what the truth is, but, but, you know, I have trouble following through with it. I have trouble acting it out. And so from the place of being awake, from the place of being consciously aware, all of us are in control of our speech, and in control of our bodies. Can we bring our actions in alignment with truth? It's one thing to speak the truth and to act in an opposite direction. When we do so, the truth becomes watered down. People don't trust us. Our words become meaningless. Meaningless. You know, if we are speaking about one thing and doing another thing, people lose faith in us. They lose trust in us. One of the reasons Jesus was such an incredible teacher is because he spoke the truth and he acted from the truth. His life was a living example of divinity. Living example of divinity. And when we are a living example of divinity, our world changes. Our world grows. It evolves into something quite profound. Quite profound. But if we are an individual who knows non-dual wisdom quite well and can pontificate about it and yet acts like a jackass in their everyday life, well then, we're doing a disservice to the truth. We're diluting it. We're watering it down. It loses its power in the world. The way things become embodied, the way divine divine qualities become embodied is when we live from the truth. When we live from it. Now, because I've met with so many individuals over the years, you know, thousands and thousands of individuals, I've heard so many horror stories along the way about teachers speaking the truth, and then acting in manipulative ways, in greedy ways, in authoritarian ways. And it breaks my heart to hear about these. Because when a student opens their heart to a teacher or a healer, they open in such a tender and vulnerable way. And because oftentimes the student sees God, experiences God through the presence of the teacher, the pain can be quite sharp, quite deep, quite intense. It's very unfortunate. Quite unfortunate. When the teacher or healer or light worker does not act from truth. I'm from the perspective that all of us, we all know what is true in every moment. We know what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong, what is ethical and unethical. And we know because we have a heart. Our heart will let us know. Our conscience will let us know. If you step out of the truth, any time we try to lie or cheat or manipulate an individual, we can feel the pain of darkness in our heart, the pain of ego, the pain of me-ness or selfishness. And so, yes, we want to speak the truth and act from the truth. And the third thing I'd like to speak about is a deep respect for all living beings and Mother Earth herself. And all of us right now, I think the majority of the planet is guilty in this regard. We do not respect all of life. We do not have a complete and full respect for Mother Earth. That's the reason the climate is changing. The reason why we are living in a time of mass extinction. And so much of this has to do with what we consume, how we overconsume in this world. We take more than we need. In a sense, one of the Buddha's precepts was that we refrain from stealing. We refrain from taking what is not ours. It's quite unfortunate the way our whole world is set up. In fact, when we drive a car, if we look at what our car is, what it's made out of, it's made out of all these minerals that we've taken from the earth. And when we eat food, our diet, so oftentimes we take the life of another being. And of course, if we eat a plant-based diet, we're eating from food which replenishes itself. Doesn't experience as much pain and harm. is when we eat a diet based on animals. I was reading something the other day, someone posted online about, you know, the life of a turkey, the life of chickens, and how what great experience, great suffering. And so when we live in a way where we don't have respect for other living beings, it creates great pain, great suffering in the world. And so all of us can look at this, say, how can I live in a way which causes less pain, less suffering in the world? How can I live in a way which causes less environmental devastation in this world? If it really is true that we are all one, are my actions in alignment with this? Or do I take and take and take, consume and consume more than I need? And what kind of impact does that have on the animals and the plants and the planet? And eventually, of course, what kind of impact does that have on me, on my consciousness, on my nervous system? So are we living in a way that respects all living beings? And a great question for us is, how could we more deeply respect? One of the beautiful things that's happening is if I walk outside my home, here it's almost there, and I still have a garden full of kale. It's a beautiful thing. It's one of the ways that I respect the Mother Earth, through planting a garden, through growing my own vegetables, through doing my best to eat low on the food chain. And it's a beautiful thing she's providing for me right here. Beginning of December, I'm still harvesting kale and Swiss chard and cabbage in Colorado. I don't live in Costa Rica. It's a beautiful thing. And so, yes, we can all work with this one. The fourth one is the one that I see the most trouble with. It's abstaining from sexual misconduct. And if we follow this to respect and maintain clear, healthy, happy adult boundaries in regards to sexuality, so much pain is caused in the name of sex. So much. So many great gurus, I can make a long list, have succumbed to this. If we really look at the energy of sex, it's the creative force. It's the creative force of reality, is what it is. It's not that sex is good or bad or right or wrong. It's a neutral force, but it is powerful, incredibly powerful. And so the question is are we living in alignment with truth in our relationships? Time and time again, I've seen so much pain from teachers sleeping with students. And yes, students sleeping with teachers. Students giving themselves to teachers. It was interesting. I was listening to one woman speak, and she was speaking about how she seduced the teacher. Her ego had tricked her into thinking, if I sleep with him, that means I am just as enlightened as he is. I'm at the same level as he is. Everyone will know my worth when they see me with him. And of course, this is not the truth. It's not the truth. When students and teachers are sleeping together, be great pain, great samsara, great wounds to which arise. And sexuality is one of those things, is one of those things that's so often misunderstood because the forces are so powerful within us. There's so much delusion that goes along with it. And so it's important that we have clear, healthy, happy adult boundaries. Like within the realm of my counseling practice, the rules are very clear. It's 2 years. 2 years since the last time I had contact with the individual. Are we allowed to start the conversation of dating? 2 years. And I think that's very healthy. Extremely healthy. Now, many years ago, it used to be common practice for therapists to sleep with their patients. One of the things that happens when we meet with such intimacy, you know, as a teacher, a student, it's easy for the lines to get blurred. It's easy for things to get messy. We're opening our hearts together and we're seeing the absolute beauty of each other. And I like to keep the rules simple. This is the firm no, we don't go there. A firm sense of, you know, the teacher and the student should keep their pants on. And I hate to say it, but it happens more often than not, this danger. More often than not. You know, I've been around the block enough in the spiritual world to see what great pain has been caused. What great pain. And so oftentimes, the teacher's ego, the force of desire will get a hold of them. And they'll open these doors. They'll start saying silly things like we're going to practice tantric sexuality and open new worlds together and this and that. And it's all delusion, a great delusion. It causes so much pain. So much heartaches, and almost always ends in disaster. The beautiful thing about God is the truth always comes out in the wash. It always does. Whether you're a great teacher or just the average Joe, it always comes out. God wants it to come out. Because when the truth is discovered, then we have an opportunity to grow. We have an opportunity to heal. We have an opportunity to see, oh, I fell on my face. I made huge mistakes here. And so it's important to have an attitude of beginner's mind. Again, whether we're a great teacher or just an ordinary individual like you and I, it's important to live from this humility. Humility and choosing to live ethically and wholesomely, as the Buddha said. The fifth thing that I'd like to speak about is that there is open feedback from students and peers. And so I can say right now, if anything I say which you don't understand doesn't make sense, if I say something that is rude or mean or not the truth, then you correct me. That's the job of the student. That's the job of my peers, to straighten me out. And it's my job is to be open and to be willing to hear feedback, to receive feedback, to ask for feedback. One of the beautiful things that my teacher, often he used to pull me aside and he'd say, Craig, I'd like you to give me some feedback I'm doing as a teacher. I always would look at him dumbfounded because I thought he was the most amazing teacher ever. And I was thinking, what could I say, you know, about how you teach, David? You're an incredible teacher. But it's a beautiful thing, his openness and his willingness. And there was times when he would listen to me. He'd listen to me speak. And it was an opportunity where he heard something new from me, where he learned from my presence. Whether I was teaching him, how to frame a building, how to build walls in a temple, or, how to do this thing or that thing to fix something mechanical, or speaking about my experience of divinity, he was open and receptive. And so one of the great things is if we are open and receptive to feedback, then so many disasters are averted. It's when we become full of ourselves and think we know everything, and we are unwilling to hear feedback, when we think we know better than everyone else, that's when we get ourselves in trouble. Great trouble. Because the pain of arrogance and pride takes over our consciousness. It can be quite unfortunate. There's many teachers that live in a way where they put up this front, that they know everything, that they are fully, completely, totally, that there's no more work to do, no more growth for them. And that is absolutely not the case. We live in an evolutionary world. Growth goes on forever. Forever. And so it's important that we have an attitude of beginner's mind. That we are open to feedback. Number 6. It's along that same line, is that we actively investigate and integrate our own shadow. We acknowledge that as human beings, that we all have a shadow. We all have blind spots. And that we actually take the top shadow to see, where am I off? Where am I deluded? Where am I confused? Where is my blind spot? And oftentimes it's important that we spend some time in therapy. We spend some time with other teachers, where we ask for, what's called in the world of psychology, if you're a therapist, you ask supervision. Your supervisor helps point out your shadow. A good teacher will help point out your shadow. It's one of the things I do all day long throughout my work week, is point out shadows. And to me, shadow is a beautiful thing, because within our shadow are gifts, are greater aspects of our own divinity. So oftentimes people are so terrified of their shadow, they think, oh, it's all negative, or it's bad, or those are my dark, deep secrets. When we begin to open the door to our shadow, we begin to discover there are gifts there. When we work with the shadow of anger, we discover power. When we work with the shadow of fear, we discover fearlessness. True confidence, deathlessness, indestructibility. When we work with the shadow of falling apart, that feeling like, oh my God, I'm going to fall apart, I can't handle life, I'm going to be completely overwhelmed. You discover incredible strength. The shadow is the doorway the greater and greater aspects of awakened consciousness. It's a beautiful thing to open to your shadow. There's so much to learn in the realm of shadow work. It's literally opening doors to your own unexpressed, unmanifest divinity. Yet if the shadow is unchecked, there could be great pain, great misfortune. Many unwholesome behaviors can arise. Karma can be created if we actively ignore one's shadow. Oftentimes I see a teacher using spirituality to remain guarded and stuck in some expanded state of consciousness, while they are actively ignoring their shadow and actively acting out unholy behavior. It's very unfortunate. Incredibly unfortunate when I see this. Oftentimes when we put forth a big front like this, like we are a perfected being, well then there's going to be a big fall. And the big fall is good when it happens, because a big fall is an opportunity for us to grow. For us to grow. For awareness to wake up within our own internal shadow, our own internal darkness. And so the last thing on my list, and this is an ongoing list here, that I'm creating and reworking, going to build together into a more formal list, but the eighth thing I have is to refrain from the use of intoxicants that lead to loss of awareness. So in many cultures, you know, drinking is something that's widely accepted. You know, there's in some towns there's liquor stores in every on every corner. Well, where I live in Colorado, it's a marijuana legal state. And so there's people that are smoking mass amounts of marijuana. And then also there's this new thing that's going on where the people are doing, you know, doing lots and lots of ayahuasca. You know, people are taking pain pills or getting addicted to pain pills or serious drugs, opioids. There's all these things that we can do. Sometimes individuals I meet with, they take psychotropic drugs like Prozac or antidepressants when they don't actually need them. They get on these medications when, you know, they were experiencing great pain. Stay on the medication for years. Their body develops an addiction to them. Whenever we put anything in our body that affects our mind, it has the potential to dull awareness. And so part of this, you know, what I'm speaking about here is just to have, you know, a clear sense of what's good for me. What's good for me? Now, none of us, you know, need to think that we're a great sinner if we, you know, have, you know, a glass of, you know, beer every now and then, or wine or whatever it is. But the question is, are we abusing it? Are we abusing it in a way that is leading to a loss of awareness, a loss of receptivity? Are we dulling our experience? Are we avoiding our own pain and covering it up with alcoholism or marijuana use? Are we chasing after great experiences through the use of psychedelics, you know, such as ayahuasca or mushrooms or whatever, LSD, people do? And are we doing it in a way that's actually harmful to our brain, to our body? And so these are questions. All of these, you know, I encourage you to look at these, not from a place of Craig said these things are bad, but more just from a place of an open-ended discussion within our own nature. we look at these? Can we look at this code of ethics? Can we investigate our shadow? We can all ask, are we speaking the truth in every moment of our lives? Are we acting from the truth in every moment of our lives? Are we respecting all? Are we abstaining from sexual misconduct? Are we open to feedback? Are we actively investigating our shadow? Do we have the attitude of beginner's mind? Are we refraining from the use of intoxicants? And so there's probably many more things we could speak about. But I invite you just to sit with these. Investigate them within your own self. To see what is true for me. How can I live the highest? How can I be a conduit of grace, of peace, of love in this world? So I thank you all for joining me this evening. I thank you all for showing up. And I look forward for us to meet again next week. And as always, I thank you for your donations. For those of you who mailed checks to me, for those of you who are going to the PayPal link on my website, I thank you for that. These teachings wouldn't be possible without your generous support. So let me take the moment and just thank you all for showing up and opening your hearts. And for those of you who offered financial support, it's very important, and I'm very grateful for that. So thank you so much, all. And thank you, Regina, for hosting the group. And I deeply appreciate this honor of joining you this evening. May peace be with you all. And have a wonderful evening.